This episode of the Missed Spots podcast is sponsored by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a free 30-day trial by going to audiblepodcast.com/missspots. Choose from over 150,000 titles that can be downloaded to your computer, iPhone, Android phone, or any other audio device. Get Terry Funk, More Than Just Hardcore, Dusty, Reflections of Wrestling's American Dream, or many other options. It can be yours for free by going to audiblepodcast.com/missspots. Thanks. Now enjoy the show.
Time to play the game!
Welcome back, everybody, to a new episode of the Missed Spots podcast. I'm Mike.
I'm Kevin.
And we're a little bit late. We typically do an episode the week after a pay-per-view, but you had some things that you needed to take care of.
I think we were both busy and we had some things going on, but we have a big episode because of it.
Yeah.
Talking about one pay-per-view, or actually two pay-per-views and an upcoming pay-per-view. So,
yeah. We'll jump right into things. Payback was now a little over a week ago, and it was a pay-per-view that we kind of said, who cares about what's going to happen here? And it was very good, a very good pay-per-view.
I thought Payback was great. I thought that Extreme Rules, it was Extreme Rules before that, right?
Yes.
So Extreme Rules and Payback, I both thought were very entertaining and quality shows. I like Payback a lot. I mean, I can't right now come up with all the matches. I think we can run down really quickly what we thought about the show. So why don't you start with that?
We had two pre-show matches. First of all, R-Truth getting his maybe second win of the year 2015 by beating Stardust. They had a little quasi-feud, I guess, going on over spiders.
Good, yeah.
Yeah. Then the Ascension defeated the meta powers of Curtis Axel and Macho Mandow.
Is to beat a dead horse again, is there any greater injustice to Damian Sandow than what they're doing to him right now? He had him literally set up to be mid-card baby face that they could put out into the show to entertain whenever they want. And he had all that goodwill built up with the fans to take out Miz. And now they've just put him in a comedy tag team and having him impersonate other people and get squashed and beaten pretty handily by the Ascension.
Yeah. I mean, the Ascension, who we thought were all but buried up until this point, and we thought that they'd probably lose this match to this newly formed team. And Axel cut his beard and dyed it blonde so that he could have the Hogan mustache. I was a little surprised by the move. I'm not upset by it because I think that the Ascension deserve to be pushed better than this makeshift comedy team.
And I agree with you on that. It's such a shame. I mean, if you are Damian Sandow right now, you've got to be saying, what the fuck do I have to do? What do I have to do to be a serious competitor on this roster when I've organically gotten over with a shit gimmick? And instead of just running with it, they go, oh, let's just have him keep doing that same thing he was doing before.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's cute. I mean, having him go out there, it was funny watching them both come out, and Curtis Axel did a good job of playing up as Hulk Hogan, but it's a tiny little funny little segment, and that's it.
Yeah.
Nothing more.
On to the main show, we kicked off the pay-per-view with Sheamus beating Dolph Ziggler in a really hard-hitting match in which Dolph got busted open hard way from a headbutt and required, I think, 10 or 12 stitches.
It was pretty brutal looking, yeah.
Awesome little match between these guys. And here's the key to this pay-per-view. It was matches. It was stories being told in the ring by the competitors. Not a whole lot of backstage segments going on. No real authority segments getting in there. They just put on really good wrestling matches.
Those two guys, the story with Sheamus saying, this is, his, you know, are you entertained thing he's doing now, where he wants to beat up the small guys on the roster and show that he's a big man. It's a pretty good role for him, and he's embraced the heel role really well. He is a brute. He brutalizes his opponents. He works tough. He looks like he works stiff. It's a perfect role for him. And if there's anyone that's going to be good to flop around for somebody, it's Ziggler. And the fact that he came out on the upper, Sheamus came out as the winner in that match, and it was a good match. He told a good story in the ring. It was great. I thought it was a great match.
Absolutely. We had a 2 out of 3 falls tag team title match with the New Day and, Tyson and Kidd, squaring off.
Tyson and Kidd?
Oh, I'm JBL now. Tyson Kidd and
You'll
Cesaro.
You'll never be as bad as JBL.
Oh, no. No.
Yourself.
But he does do that all the time. Again, great match. There was a couple miscues in there. The end of the second fall where Kofi and Big E tried to do a double team maneuver on the, and Kofi came nowhere close on it.
And that was also the match where Cesaro tried to do a double underhook, some suplex or slam, and he couldn't get Big E up, right?
Yeah.
And, I mean, but one thing that someone pointed out online, the fact that Cesaro didn't drop Big E on his head, the fact that he protected him in doing that, because who knows? It could have been Big E that obviously didn't sandbag him, but didn't time it right. Mm-hmm. Or it could have just been the fact that Cesaro was relying too much on his strength. Whatever it was, fact of the matter is he got him over and onto and to land on his back, which is just, it's a little thing, but it's important to see that.
It shows a good wrestler.
That he's a professional.
He's looking out for everyone in the ring. He doesn't want to actually hurt anyone.
Yeah, because it would have been easy just to drop the guy on his neck.
Mm-hmm.
But no, this was a great match, too. The heels retained.
With shenanigans.
So New Day looks great right now. I mean, they have taken an awful... They tried to push these guys as baby faces, and maybe the plan all along was to do this as them being the delusional heel tag team. Maybe that was the idea all along. Maybe they planned on stealing Bo Dallas's gimmick for the New Day. I doubt it, but maybe they did. And if they did, kudos to them, because they now have a despised heel faction that is entertaining and funny and interesting. The stuff that
Xavier
Woods yells. I mean, the last pay-per-view, I think it was the last pay-per-view, and then they're like, what are you talking about? We're winning!
Yeah.
Like, and then this one, it was, they were chanting, this is awesome, and he's yelling, we are aware! We are aware!
He also busted out some old NBA Jam quotes. He said, we're on fire! Followed by boom shakalaka.
Nice.
I think he's in the best role that he's ever been in.
These guys have chemistry together as a unit, and then against Cesaro and Kidd. And I like seeing Cesaro and Kidd as the babyface trying to chase the titles. This was another great match.
Yeah. We then were followed up with Bray Wyatt taking on Ryback. Ryback put on a good match. He apparently broke a rib during
legitimately,
and still kept on going, because I think that happened rather early in the match, and they went a little under 16 minutes. One of the longer matches of the night.
I expected nothing from this match, and I got a good match.
Mm-hmm.
They worked for two guys who. I love Bray in the ring because of he's different from everybody else. He has some nice impact moves, but he's definitely not a ring general. He's not a guy you expect. He's not Seth Rollins. He doesn't go out there and put a great match on with everybody. And Ryback is stiff and kind of just a big pile of muscle, you know, around there. So I didn't expect much, but these guys told a good story in the ring. It was for a feud that was put together for, we don't really know why, and that since has just dropped off the map. Mm-hmm. They did a good job of working within the constraints of the storyline to give us a good match. Bray went over. He won a pay-per-view match, yeah. Which is always important when you talk about Bray Wyatt.
And apparently he won the feud, too.
Right, apparently. We never talk about it since, which is, I found a little bit bizarre. But good match. We're talking about just hitting out the park. Each one of these matches mm-hmm. was very good.
Yeah. We then had the I Quit match with Cena defending the U.S. title against Rusev. There were a couple botches, and there were some... You had your traditional Cena gimmick match spot with the pyro thing, and I honestly thought that was going to be the end of the match, but I'm thankful it wasn't. But there was some really good moments to that that really showed like these two were trying to hurt one another and really beat the other down.
There was one point, maybe you can help me with this, when they were on the outside, Rusev set up a table against a barrier, and I think he was supposed to end up going through it, or put Cena through it, and something got messed up with him going through the table. Cena recovered, and like 5 minutes later, they used that same spot. Do you know what I'm talking about?
They were outside in the crowd, they went over to the production table, they cleared the table, and Rusev went to go Alabama slam Cena, and the table flipped over.
Okay.
Before Cena went down onto it. And then Cena tried to set it up and looked like he was going to try to put AA Rusev through it. Then, yeah, a few minutes later, they went and did the Alabama slam spot again.
The thing I liked about that the most was it shows you, as everyone likes to hate on Cena, and I'm guilty of it as well, they got back around to that spot without looking rushed with it. Cena recovered, gave it back to Rusev, and then eventually they did the spot again, which a lot of times you see someone miss a spot and immediately go right back to it.
Yeah.
But they showed Cena took that back over, slowed it down, and set it back up, which just shows the professionalism of John Cena.
Despite the fact that Cena talks so freaking loud and calls his spots in the ring so loud, he is becoming very good at calling a match. Mm-hmm. Like, he knows what the other person should do, what he should do, and I think he's getting very good at becoming sort of a ring general. His work has improved mm-hmm. greatly over the past couple years. He just needs to speak quieter.
Yeah. This match was one of my least favorite of the four that they've done. And I think it's because of the gimmicks, because they had to go outside so often. I hate the pyro spot. There's no danger there, and we all know there's no danger there. Having Lana quit for Rusev.
Yeah, that was.
But you know what? They wanted in the context of the storyline. They did it. I think they did it the right way. They did make it so that Rusev. You know, translators have said that yes, he was screaming, "I quit."
He also said something about Cena's mother, apparently.
Oh.
Yeah. Someone on Reddit translated everything that he said in Bulgarian throughout the match. And while he was in the A or the not the A STF with the rope against him, he stated that he will never quit, but he is quitting. Like, he's like, "I will never quit, but I'm quit. I quit. I will crush you. I will crush you next time. I quit. Can't you understand that I will crush you? Your mother is blah, 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 blah."
Interesting.
But I dislike that they prefaced the match by saying that you must make your opponent literally say, "I quit."
Right.
Then, Mick Foley pointed out, it's an I quit match, not a yes or no match.
Right.
Because the ref kept on asking,
Do you quit? Right. And he didn't literally say "I quit" because he didn't say it in English, but he did say "I quit" in the very first thing of the match. The very first thing he did was grab a mic and say the words "I quit."
Yeah.
Which was hilarious. But, I mean, this is, I don't think they had enough fuel in this feud to go for pay-per-views. Quite honestly, it was a little bit thin because the patriotism angle, which now is completely dropped from Rusev, because he's now the Bulgarian brute again, and he's moved, as Michael Cole said last night, or two nights ago, he moved last back, night. Last night, yeah, he moved back to Bulgaria.
Yeah.
As he's traveling around.
He picked all his stuff up and moved.
Yeah, yeah. But it was not a bad match. These guys do have chemistry together, and we knew what the outcome was going to be. What else can you say?
Yeah. Then Naomi and Tamina beat the Bellas. Then we had...
What a shame. What a fucking shame with that group of people.
Oh, come on, Nikki. Come on, Brie.
No, come on, Brie!
6 minutes too long. We had Neville defeat King Barrett by count out. That led to a Barrett beatdown after the match, which we thought was going to prolong their feud, but as we found out shortly thereafter, the next night, that's not really the case.
Right.
This didn't get that much time. It only got 7.5 minutes. So, and you had two big matches go over 20 for this. So I guess that's why they didn't get that much time.
This to me, I don't think they had a good plan of what they were going to do when they put these guys against one another. I don't think they had a good clean ending.
Hey, you're both English.
Well, I just don't think they had a clean ending in line of how they wanted to look. I like Barrett saying, no, I'm done. I mean, that's Honky Tonk Man would do it, you know, when he was carrying the Intercontinental Championship and walk away to keep his title.
Yeah, I do like that.
I do like that move, and there's an arrogance to it that can come off as cowardice or arrogance, and it works both ways. So I didn't mind that ending. And we get to see then Barrett beat down Neville. And Neville's going to be he's a smaller guy in height, so he's going to be the baby face, you know, that's working from underneath and having to, you know, have big comebacks and get beat up and has to come back from it. So it was fine. It was not one of the highlights of the pay-per-view, which it could have been, but it was okay.
And then we finished things off with the four-way match for the WWE World Heavyweight Championship, Seth Rollins defending against Roman Reigns, Dean Ambrose, and Randy Orton. And with the stipulation kind of that if Seth didn't win, Kane is fired from being director of operations. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a Kane on a pole match. Seth did win. He retains using the pedigree.
Right.
And of course getting quite a deal of help from Kane and J&J. I don't remember if we talked about this on air, but I thought I remember bringing up that maybe Seth should use the pedigree, adopt that.
I think you did say that on, I don't know if it was just you and I talking, but you did mention that before the pay-per-view.
And looks like they're going that way, especially with the way Raws have been going recently. What did you think of the match?
This was a fun match.
Yeah.
It wasn't a five-star classic. It wasn't one of those incredible matches technically, but it was just a fun match. They booked it really well. The spot with the Shield guys giving the power bomb to Orton was great, because and then the look on Seth Rollins' face when he puts his fist out and then they go to beat him up. It was just a really cool spot that they did. And then when Ambrose and Reigns are like, all right, nothing left to do but kick each other's asses.
Yeah, I did like that.
That was a cool spot. I think just in general is booked well. And Rollins does go over. He goes over by pedigreeing Orton, correct?
I think it was Orton. Think it was Orton.
Because it was actually kind of a sloppy pedigree. It didn't look very good.
Yeah.
He got it down the next night on Raw, but
his one last night was pretty good too.
Yeah. I just think it was one of those, it was a timing thing. But no, it was a good, enjoyable match. And it ended in the way we expected it to a certain extent. I thought that Kane would try to cost Rollins the match in some way or screw up and end up getting kicked out of the Authority no matter what. But other than that, I was expecting that because I thought the turmoil was going to reach ahead. Now it's just all the same over again, which is a little monotonous. And I think the Authority in general has to start breaking up because they're just boring.
Yeah.
But this is just a good capping, fun end to a really cool pay-per-view.
I agree. If you had to grade it, what would you have given this?
I give it an A.
Yeah, an A? Okay. Yeah, I was going to say a B plus.
Yeah. I give it an A because, mostly because my expectations going into it.
Yeah, that's
it
true.
It was a short turnaround. It wasn't very well. I mean, some of the matches weren't exactly what we thought were going to be barn burners. They ended up being really good. I thought it was very good. It's encouraging to see two more like beast show style shows, pay-per-views the last couple of times, really going out and doing a good job and keeping everyone, you know, interested in what's going on and putting on good wrestling too. Mm-hmm. Good wrestling.
Let's move on to NXT TakeOver Unstoppable.
Okay.
That was last Wednesday night, May 20th. And I'm just going to say right from the start that this was one of, it'd probably be for me, top 10, close to 5 favorite wrestling shows I've ever seen.
Okay. Yeah, you were really enthused. You texted me that night.
I really enjoyed that show. I was marking out in the middle of the living room. I was popping for shit, and it was, to me, front to back, a very good show, with a couple really good matches in there. We started with what was supposed to be a three-way match or a triple threat match for number one contendership for the NXT championship. Something that I really like that NXT does is they always have this, these fights for number one contendership.
Yep.
Which the main roster doesn't really do anymore.
Nope.
Finn Balor defeated Tyler Breeze. Hideo Itami was supposed to be in there, but he had a pretty bad injury that ruled him out of that.
Well, you failed to mention they set it up with a beatdown.
Yeah, they actually wrote it off pretty well.
Right, but I like Kevin Owens walking by and going, "That's a shame."
Yeah, that was pretty great.
Oh, Owens is great.
Yeah,
the guy's great. We'll talk more about him showing up on Raw in a little bit, but yeah, that was great.
Yeah. Actually, we should probably talk about that first because that was actually before this.
Let's get that out of the way then. So we had after the pay-per-view, we had two really good episodes of Raw, I thought. Or one really good episode of Raw, right? Where we had Owens come out of nowhere and deliver a good promo in the ring with against Cena and leave him laying. That was great. There were some really good wrestling matches, like good, well done wrestling matches on that episode of Raw. And I thought it was great. I thought it was an excellent episode of Raw. And then we had Raw last night, which was awful.
Yeah, we'll.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah.
But anyway, so we had a really cool thing, right? Let's just mention this, that Owens shows up with the NXT Championship on Raw. We now have a matches set up where Bo Dallas is fighting Neville on the main roster, and they're using their NXT feud mm-hmm. to hype the match. We've got Sami Zayn showing up, being introduced to the crowd by Bret Hart, mm-hmm. and talking about his time in NXT. We've got these guys. They're actually using the show to promote their talent. How ingenious, right? They couldn't do it with Ascension at all. Didn't mention anything about Ascension. Didn't do anything when Bo first came up to the roster. Didn't do anything with Adam Rose. But they're now finally seeing that this is going to be a good transition to the main roster. We might have, in the next two, three months, whenever Zayn's healthy, Owen's healthy, we might have Finn Balor. They might have like 3-4 guys just up on the main roster just like that, because they're pushing them like stars. When Owen shows up and you get NXT chants from the crowd and you get him putting down Cena and looking like a total badass.
And bringing Sami Zayn up again, so keeping Sami Zayn's name mm-hmm. fresh in those fans' heads.
And this is cross-promoting the two brands, cross-promoting the TakeOver pay-per-view. He steps on the U.S. title.
He turns down the title match.
Goes, right.
No, I already have a title, and it's more important than what you have.
Right. I mean, Owens, his mic work, his personality, there's no heel in wrestling now like Kevin Owens.
I agree.
I don't know who I would equate him to in history as far as a heel champion or a heel in general. He's very focused on his title, disinterested in almost everything else. He is intimidating without snarling. He's just very cool, very calm, and will
he's
snap
a
on a
smart
dime.
Aleck.
Yeah. Yeah, he just, his persona works. And I am so excited to see if they can make him work on the main roster.
Mm-hmm.
But now let's get back to
Unstoppable. Finn Balor became the number one contender by beating Tyler Breeze in a nice match. Two really cool entrances. Tyler had an awesome little entrance mm-hmm. with, the runway, model-like feel, and he was posting the whole thing on Periscope while he was doing it live online. Finn had his demon entrance, and he was painted up even more than he ever has with this big back piece and mm-hmm. these scars down his legs. I thought that it looked great. And those two can work so well together in the ring.
I like both the guys. Right. But Tyler Breeze is awesome. I love watching him work in the ring. He mm-hmm. does a great job selling frustration really well in the ring.
He doesn't get the pin that he wants.
He freaks out. I'll say one thing about this match. The match was very, very good, and these guys obviously work really well together. Corey Graves on commentary, he is really, really coming into his own.
Mm-hmm.
There was a time when Breeze, I don't know if he hit the money shot, but he had Finn for a pin, didn't get the pin attempt, and just started slamming the mat and freaking out. And Corey Graves mentions the fact that he's wasting time.
Mm-hmm.
He's wasting time. He's the heel announcer, and he's basically admonishing the heel, but he's doing it in a way that makes sense. And this is something that Jesse the Body Ventura would do. This is something that Bobby Heenan would do. Corey Graves has a personality to him, and it's consistent. His personality is consistent.
Mm-hmm.
It's logical in a wrestling sense, and it's heel-based. I think that he's doing great work. I'd love to see him, what he can do, announcing on the main roster.
I couldn't agree with you more. He's really coming into his own as an announcer. And, speaking of things that he said, the very next match, he had a great little quip. And the next match was Bayley and Charlotte taking on Dana Brooke and Emma. And, he made a remark towards Emma. It was something like Bayley should look up to Emma. Someone said that Emma wants Bayley to look up to her. And he goes, what, at her shoplifting? And like, ooh, they brought up a real life thing here. I thought it was a decent little match. Dana Brooke is still pretty green in the ring.
I don't like Emma. I don't think she's any good.
Really?
I really don't. And I don't know if I'm missing something because I've heard she's put on some really good matches in NXT. Obviously, she's done very little on the main roster. She looks very mechanical to me. While Bayley and Charlotte and Sasha, they all look very, very smooth. It almost always seems like she's like Emma's in like second gear and really thinking about the next move she's going to make. I don't know if it's just my thing, but she looks very mechanical to me, and I have a hard time watching her in the ring.
Okay. Yeah.
So that's one of the reasons why I didn't love the match. I like that you have this really like, you know, little sister thing with Charlotte and Bayley. Charlotte's obviously close to getting called up to the main roster. That's why she's not hanging around the title picture anymore, and they're pushing some other people into the spot. All in all, it was a fine match, and they did some creative things, some double team maneuvers and stuff that I liked, but it wasn't as good as a lot of the other women's matches have been.
Mm-hmm. We had Baron Corbin taking on Rhino next, quite possibly Baron's longest match he's ever had.
Oh, yeah, easily, yeah.
A little over 7 minutes, and he looked good with the win. That's a big win for mm-hmm. him to beat a guy like Rhino. And, Rhino's a big, small guy.
Yeah.
So the end of days look good on Rhino.
Yeah.
We've talked about before how with bigger guys, like, he didn't pull that move off very well against Bull Dempsey, because of Bull being bigger.
Yeah. I want to say he did it once that looked good and once that didn't.
And that's a move that, it'll be interesting to see how it transitions to bigger guys maybe on the main roster at some point in time. But I think Baron Corbin. Baron Corbin, who is going to bore you, apparently. I thought he looked good in his win.
The thing is that people have to realize this is still, for most of these guys, a developmental territory. Mm-hmm. They brought in indie darlings that can work circles around people, and a lot of the guys who were developmental guys have now kind of taken a step back. I mean, when I was first starting watching NXT, we had Mojo Rawley and we had the Vaudevillains and we had not to say that those guys weren't working other places, but more of the guys were raw. And it was,
you don't have these football players and these weightlifters being at the forefront, really.
Right.
Anymore.
So they have all these guys who have been doing this Kevin Owens been doing this for 20 years, since they were teenagers.
You don't give me advice.
Right. So I think it's unfair to compare those guys to each other in some range, but they're on the same show, so it's almost hard not to. Mm-hmm. Baron Corbin needs a little personality, I think, he's the lone wolf, silent killer character. He didn't do a suplex in that match. He basically punched and kicked the entire match.
Yeah.
He really didn't even pull out a wrestling move. I think that he might need to be, to be on TV every other week or so, to keep competing in some squash matches, and just keep working on the craft until he can do a little more wrestling. Because right now, he's looking weak, and that's why you're hearing, before people were, they were thrilled to see
counting
the guy out and they were
match.
Counting his matches. Now you're hearing Baron's gonna bore you, audibly on the show. It shows that people are kind of getting tired of it. Mm-hmm. And, they're gonna need to do something, cause he's got the right look, and I hope that he can, I picked the guy as being someone that could obviously transition to the main roster because his look, he's big.
I wanted to bring that up, that you did
the
top five.
Early on. This is a couple months, several months ago. And I still think it's true. It's just that he needs to develop more. Mm-hmm. But overall, this was the best match I think he's competed in. Rhino is not there to become a world champion. Rhino's there because he's a veteran that people like, he doesn't need to win to keep his heat, and he's there to put over guys like Baron Corbin.
Yeah. NXT Tag Team Championship match next with the champions, the Dubstep Cowboys, as I've seen them called on the internet, but Blake and Murphy defending against Enzo Amore and Big Cass. We had a little swerve at the end with Alexa Bliss aligning herself with Blake and Murphy and helping them retain the titles. I am with you what you've said, that Enzo would be a great manager.
I agree, yeah.
I'm getting a little tired of seeing him be the face in peril and every tag team match, and then Big Cass coming in and cleaning house. Although I don't know if Big Cass can be a singles guy. I don't think he has enough for that.
He's just really raw. He's very similar to Baron Corbin. He's a really raw guy. Where he needs serious ring work. He needs more time. Mm-hmm. And these guys are wrestling all the time. I'm guessing in the Performance Center, and now they're gonna be going on the road more, so they're getting more and more work in. They're a good tag team. They're entertaining. The fans still love them. They love, going along with their shtick. I wasn't thrilled with this match because I've seen Blake and Murphy with the Lucha Dragons put on some really, really cool matches. But Enzo is limited and so is Big Cass. They're both very limited in the ring. So in general, this match is a little bit dull for me. I think Alexa Bliss has a lot of potential, and also she's adorable. So anytime she's on the camera is a good thing too. But she's got a lot of potential, and there's only so many spots going for the championship, the women's championship, and there's so many talented women on that roster. It's good to see her being a part of a storyline with those guys. So it set up some good angles down the road, and it was a fine tag match. But I will say this, and I mentioned this before, the NXT is so hot and is so well respected at this point in the circles of the wrestling fans that literally Blake and Murphy were enhancement talent and now are over tag champs just because they put the titles on them. And that is such an awesome thing. It makes me think there's not a lot of tag teams on the NXT roster that you can name, but the next people that are going to challenge
the titles elevated them.
Right.
Not that someone needs to elevate the title.
Right.
Which unfortunately happened to the secondary titles and
right.
the main roster.
But it's they become exciting, I think, and good tag champs.
Mm-hmm. Next up, we had, in my opinion, not just the match of the night, but quite possibly match of the year that I've seen thus far, with the NXT Women's Championship, Sasha Banks defending against Becky Lynch. I thought this was an incredible match.
Absolutely incredible. Becky Lynch, my fucking God. The performance she put on, everything, her from the start of the match to crying after the match, mm-hmm. to her body language, her several submission moves I've never seen used before, several just transitional moves I've never seen used before. She looked fucking incredible. And Sasha Banks always does.
Yeah.
Always does.
Those two should be so proud of what they put on. And I would be almost terribly depressed if they went to the main roster and had to do silly, foolish things that main roster women have to do.
Right now, they should literally swap rosters. They should take Bayley, Charlotte, Sasha, Becky Lynch, Alexa Bliss, Carmella. They should take them all up. Put them on the main roster and put some real storylines and take every diva but Paige and take them down to NXT and let them all do some work. Because what they're doing in the ring is, it was the best match of the night. It was one of the best matches of the year. That's a clinic that they put on in that match. And they should be so proud of what they're accomplishing, all the women in NXT, because they've set the bar so high that the tag match to open up the pay-per-view was disappointing to me just because it wasn't incredible. That's how high that people like Charlotte and Bayley and them have set the bar with those matches. And to me, Becky Lynch came out as a fucking star.
I agree.
As a fucking star.
I was a little wondering why, like, okay, I guess Becky might be the next in the pecking order. I didn't think that she's proved herself enough to get a title match, but you know, prove me wrong. And she did a fucking incredible job.
And once again, Sasha puts on an incredible match every time. It was my opinion, and just from watching them work, that Charlotte was the best worker on the roster, just because she's so athletic. I loved her look. I loved her swagger. But it's obvious to me that Sasha Banks at this point is the best, most fluid. She ups everyone's game around her.
Mm-hmm.
I think she's one of these people, as young as she is, I think you'd put her in a match with Emma, who I don't think is incredible, who has some deficiencies in the ring. I think she'll bring her to a great match. She's that good.
Mm-hmm.
Her persona is wonderful. Yeah, she's just incredible.
I agree.
Her and Charlotte should be on the main roster very soon. I'd love to see Becky holding that title and defending against all comers. That would be a really nice thing for a few months. And start elevating some of the other, you know, Carmella and Alexa Bliss. It's time. It's time for those guys.
Sign blue pants. really?
Yeah.
So then Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn had the pleasure of having to follow that match with their NXT championship match. Technically ruled a no contest as Owens just murdered Sami Zayn again in the ring. It states on Wikipedia that the match never technically ended. So that's why it's being called a no contest. The bell didn't sound for the end of the match. Owens beat down. Then we have the debut of Samoa Joe to come out and sort of save Sammy from further beat down. You're not too familiar with Joe from his work in the Indies, ROH, TNA, Japan and such. But Joe is a big figure with the independents as well. Quite possibly one of the biggest indie guys in the past 10 years. I wouldn't even want to say 10 years because he was with TNA for 9. Mm-hmm. But he was one of those internet darlings who became a big name in TNA, kind of fell by the wayside a little bit, then started making a comeback, before he left TNA. He's not your prototypical looking wrestler at all. He's bigger. He's chubbier.
Mm-hmm.
But the guy can move. The guy can do some really hard hitting offense. His kind of gimmick is he's going to beat your ass and he'll probably make you submit. But in the time that you're in the ring, he's going to hurt you. And, he's got the whole Joe's going to kill you, chant behind him. I love seeing him face off with Owens, and Owens back down, comes back, then like, no.
Yeah.
Apparently Joe has the similar deal to Rhino, to where it is not an exclusive deal. He can still do indies. I guess that's why also he's keeping his name.
Mm-hmm.
And, it'll be interesting to see where that leads. Is it just going to be NXT, or will he eventually sign a full deal and go to the main roster?
Well, it's exciting. Even though I don't know Samoa Joe, I know of him. I know his reputation. So it was exciting to see that happen at the end of the match, at the end of the show. I just thought that the match itself was very repetitive. It was pretty much what we saw at the last TakeOver special. The last time that
Rival, yeah.
Yeah, when those guys hooked up. So, and I think it had to be that because Sammy is injured and he kind of had to just take a beat down for the most part. There was a couple cool little spots. I liked the, when they went to the outside and, Owens went to give him a power bomb and Sammy held on to the railing. Mm-hmm. That was kind of cool. There was a couple cool little spots there that I enjoyed. And Owens is great. So, ending on a stare down between those two, I thought it felt a little more like a regular NXT thing to me, just because I like to see the match be the finish, but obviously they had to do something else because of, I think, Sammy's limitations.
And they're obviously that holding out on the ultimate fight between Owens and Joe. They didn't want to just give away Joe coming in and beating up Owens. So the stare down works. It builds anticipation to where when they are going to meet. But I thought this was a great show, and I would put it up against most shows that I've seen in my time, and really looking forward to what NXT has coming up. They taped the day after. And the first episode is going to be tomorrow, so I'm looking forward to watching some NXT tomorrow, or today when you're listening to this, hopefully. But yeah, great show from NXT. We had bad show from Raw last night.
Let's just say this. So the Authority, the promo to start the show last night was ridiculously long and stupid. I like Dean Ambrose a lot, but he has the ability to be, he should be a heel right now. Dean Ambrose really needs to be a heel.
Because, he's so goddamn corny.
Because
as a
he's
face.
Exactly. He's like a neutered baby face. I mean, why is calling Seth Rollins Justin Bieber an insult? I mean, I don't understand how that's relevant at this point. It's just cheesy. It comes along as childish. And Dean, he's like doing like these weird little dance moves and stuff. He
brought up Human Centipede.
Yes, it's just
that's not very PG.
There's so many things that are just cheesy. He needs to be an unhinged heel, so he can cut loose and stop playing to the crowd. When he's playing to the crowd, it comes off very cheesy to me.
Yeah,
and it's a shame because I like the character and I think he can be doing a lot more. That being said, I like seeing Rollins and Ambrose in a match, so it's good to see that they set up to do their match at Elimination Chamber. But the first hour and a half of Raw, in my opinion, last night was unfucking watchable.
I don't even remember what most of
there
was
that
going on.
Super drawn out thing with Rusev and Lana, which was like a Bad Days of Our Lives episode.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
and Ziggler coming out and they're kissing and why are they, it just, there, it was just so bad. You had R-Truth in a match with Rusev, right?
No, yeah.
With Rusev. R-Truth, for some odd reason, is now in the Intercontinental Championship match at Elimination Chamber and gets squashed in 2 minutes.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Okay, now we're doing this. It's just idiotic to put him. Why is he in that match? I know they put him in the ladder match at WrestleMania as like comic relief, but there's no even build up to this. There's no reason for him to be there. Like I said, the Rusev angle was just painful. We finally got some closure on it. We think that's at least a good part of it. But no Bray Wyatt last night.
I want to call something that I feel like is going to happen next for Lana.
Okay.
Okay, we all know that Lana is not really Russian.
Right.
So they can't have her playing this Russian forever.
Right.
Dolph takes her to speech classes to work on her getting rid of her accent, and that's how they write off her having an American accent eventually, or having no accent eventually.
I would not put it past them.
I wouldn't in the slightest.
Let's mention the Dean Ambrose thing of being arrested for hitting a cameraman. Once again, Dean Ambrose, and this is like when he was getting his more of a main event push last year when he was feuding with Rollins. He did the, you know, the gel pack in the suitcase and he abused a dummy. He's like a neutered
in a box.
Yeah, yeah.
Had hot dog stand.
Right, right. He is a neutered Stone Cold Steve Austin. He's 100%. They're using angles and stuff that Austin would do, but they're doing it in the cheesiest, clumsiest way possible. At the end of the show, he shows back up in the SWAT team van, or whatever it was, wearing a cop's hat and jacket for some reason, with 2 nightsticks.
Only one got used. Oh, wait, he gave the other one to Reigns, that's right.
And it's not even like when Austin drove the Zamboni down to the ring and jumped the people from the... He just wanted to drive it in and, hey, how you doing, everybody?
I like how you are exonerated from a crime by a video being posted online showing that someone pushed the victim into you. You still punched that
right.
person.
Yes.
You still turned around and punched that person. But Corey Graves actually tweeted out that apparently in Long Island it is legal to steal a police vehicle when there are WWE World Championship ramifications.
Oh, there were a couple. Lance Storm is amazing. He tweets live for Raw every week.
Yeah,
and he said about the New Day. The tag team 10-on whatever match. He's like, so the heel tag team is now at the numbers disadvantage. Good way to build heat for them.
Yeah.
Making them the underdogs. And he also said something about his daughter walking into the room and saying, this is really stupid, and turning around and walking out. Because there were several times that night where it was just fucking stupid.
I thought Kane was going to give us some Steiner math at one point because he came out during the promo from the New Day and goes, normally you have a 1 in 6 chance.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, we're going to get Steiner math.
But this is the thing. Why is Kane coming out and belittling the heels? I mean, they were complaining because they were put in the match, but even then, that doesn't make any sense to me. This was just a very bad show. It was very, very weak. Having the Bellas on commentary, any time you put the Bellas on commentary, you might as well have just thrown that segment in the trash because they are so bad. And they're trying to lob them softballs to get them to talk about anything competently. They can do none of it. They are so bad. So bad.
Yeah.
They just need to go away. My God, do they need to go away. The only good thing about the Bellas was that Nikki has become a competent worker in the ring with her heel persona.
Mm-hmm.
They've now, I'm still not over the fact that they're baby faces. I have no idea. I will never give up on this. It'll be 2 years from now, and I'm still waiting for my explanation of why they're baby faces.
Brie has turned heel and face within the past year with no explanation on either.
Because of that, I could care less about what they're doing because they don't care enough to for me to care.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about the fact that Rusev is now Bulgarian again.
Yes.
Okay. As I mentioned earlier on the show, Michael Cole, he has moved back to Bulgaria. While they're touring around, he's spent the time to move away from Russia.
He has the monies.
Yeah, yeah. So he's Bulgarian again, waving the Bulgarian flag, and he's not Russian. Okay. Fine. They could have never done it. It would have been okay with me, but okay. So that's fine. We haven't seen Bray Wyatt.
Nope.
Since he beat Ryback.
Well, he fought Dean Ambrose twice last week.
Okay, on Raw and then SmackDown.
Yeah. But we haven't seen Orton.
We haven't seen Orton. But why does Bray Wyatt... Are they just waiting for Money in the Bank to get him in something? I don't know.
We haven't seen Harper and Rowan. They put them back together with Devastation in mind, and they're not even in the Tag Team Elimination Chamber match.
Right. Which they have to put Los Matadores in there because...
Of course.
Why would you have to put Los Matadores anywhere?
Yeah.
But no. So there seems to be some lag and kind of not knowing what to do with people. I will say I'm very excited about Bo Dallas and Neville.
Mm-hmm.
That's really... I like seeing... Because even though Bo got his gimmick stolen by the New Day, he is, I think, incredible. I love him on the mic. And I think... I'm looking forward to an actual feud. Yeah. Bo Dallas has a feud, and he's going to fight on a pay-per-view.
Funny thing, yesterday someone posted on Reddit the first episode of the reformatted NXT, like NXT or FCW becoming NXT, okay. Not the reality show mm-hmm. NXT. And it was kind of odd to watch because of how different things are with some of these characters. Very first match, Bo Dallas against Rick Victor. Rick Victor just kind of playing a... normal jobber like guy. Victor obviously in the Ascension now.
Yeah.
But Bo with this super positive, like, I got a smile that will knock your socks off, like gimmick. Just cheese ball shit. They had the original Ascension, which was Connor O'Brien and I can't remember the other dude's name. He's some English guy who's not with the company anymore. And they squashed CJ Parker and Tyler Breeze. Tyler Breeze didn't even get into the match. They just destroyed CJ Parker, sans dreads.
Really?
They had promos for Seth Rollins, promos for Bray Wyatt. And then the main event was Tyson Kidd against Michael McGillicuddy, Curtis Axel. It was weird to watch, but nostalgic at the same time. And you had JR and William Regal calling the action, mm-hmm. which was pretty cool. But it's odd to see that, but it's great to see where they've come and how they've developed their characters in that time. And now there's actually some talk of putting... possibly Bo with a reunited Wyatt family.
I mean, how would that fit?
He's this, I don't know, maybe he's this delusional guy that doesn't know his direction and Bray gonna try to help him
right.
find
his... Would he have to grow a beard? Would he have to start to dress in dirty clothes? I mean, who knows what we're gonna have to do with that? But having Bo being a part of the show is great for me.
Yeah.
Maybe they're just holding on to Bray until they can start to work for Money in the Bank. Hopefully he'll be involved in that match. I'd love to see him win it. We feel like he's probably going to be someone like Roman winning Money in the Bank, but maybe not. I'd love to see Bray win it. I could see maybe Rusev winning it to try to get some heat back after this whole thing with Cena, but he might have been too damaged after that to jump into that that situation. Elimination Chamber, who's going to win the Intercontinental Championship?
Okay, so we got, Sheamus, Ryback, R-Truth, King Barrett, Rusev, and Dolph. I think it's going to be Dolph or Rusev.
Really?
I'm split on that.
Not going with Sheamus?
No. I think that Rusev and Dolph's feud would go better if there was maybe a title involved. But okay. At the same time, you know what? They're kind of fighting over Lana, so maybe right. You don't need a belt there.
I think it's Sheamus. I think they were planning all along to have... I thought they were planning all along to have Daniel Bryan feud with Sheamus when he came back mm-hmm. and possibly end up lifting the title from him that way. But I think Sheamus is going to take the Intercontinental Championship.
Yeah, you know what? I might not be surprised at seeing
that. Now, let's just say one thing about Barrett. Who did he piss off? I know they gave him the King of the Ring, right? So he comes back. We've gone over this ad nauseum. He gets the Intercontinental Championship, loses every match he has after it. They take the title off of him. They give him King of the Ring. Out of nowhere, he becomes King of the Ring. Loses every fucking match after that. Who did he hit Vince McMahon's car in the parking lot? did he step on his dog's tail? What did he do? Because he lost clean last night again. He just loses over and over again. I mean, I feel bad for the fucking guy. If you're gonna make the King of the Ring, which I think should be an annual thing again, I think it should be a regular pay-per-view, but if they want to do it on the network, that's even better. It's good content for the network.
Yeah, exactly.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Just like the Elimination Chamber, I think it's fine that they're doing it this way. If they want to make it a big deal so that the next guy who wins it is a big deal, you gotta make it mean something. You gotta give him some momentum from that. But just going out there with a robe and a crown, who the fuck cares if you lose every goddamn match you fight? Yeah, that's a little side note. With that the Intercontinental Championship match. How about the tag titles? What do you think?
All right, so we got New Day, Lucha Dragons, Kid and Cesaro, Primetime Players, Ascension, and Los Matadores. I think the New Day will retain.
Think so?
Yeah, I think it'll come down to them or some combination of them and Kid and Cesaro, and I don't know how, but I feel like they might win with cheating in some way, shape, or form. Mm-hmm. I don't know how, but they'll figure out probably some way.
I think it's a good idea for them to hold on to the titles. I do think, unfortunately, as much as I like Kid and Cesaro, they treat the tag team division... For a while, they had no tag teams. Now, with the Primetime Players back together, with Ascension actually being used, with the Wyatts... and the Lucha Dragons up on the main roster, they have a lot of tag teams to mess around with here now.
Yeah, and no Usos in the picture either.
Yeah, Usos
who
will
are
be back
gonna come back
at some point. But they don't. There's never two tag feuds at the same time. There's one. Whoever's shooting for the title is who they're talking about. So unfortunately, I think that they're going to push Lucha Dragons, even though they haven't been on TV the last couple weeks very often. I think that they want to push them. So I would. I think it might. Move the feud away if the New Day retains. Move Kid and Cesaro out of that picture. Hopefully into a feud with Ascension or the Wyatts or someone so they can have something to do. But I think that it's going to be... out of this match, I think Lucha Dragons are going to get a push towards the title.
There are rumors of breaking up Kid and Cesaro by the end of summer and giving them each singles pushes with... Kid going towards a mid-card title and hopefully Cesaro getting into the main event picture. I was reading that Triple H is really trying to push Cesaro hard on Vince and showing how he's improved and how the fans are so behind him.
Either one of those guys would look really good with the IC title.
Yeah.
Really good with the IC title. Or even maybe with Kid going after... I don't think that, I think that the main event scene is so crowded with other guys that should be up there, with Rusev being there, Bray Wyatt being there, you still have Orton hanging around. I think it'd be hard for Cesaro to get in that picture, but I can see Kid going after the US title at some point and Cesaro, like a long reigning work rate Intercontinental Champion, mm-hmm. which would be great. But now we have some tag teams that are actually working. They're building the foundations of some good stuff here. We just have to have the storylines to go through it. And I'll mention about the tag teams. The tag team match, the farce that was last night before, I mean, it was 1 minute until the whole thing broke down. Yeah. But they gave the tag team titles. That was the last segment of Raw.
The last match.
But the last match segment, whatever. That's cool. It's cool that they featured that.
Yeah.
That was a really cool thing.
And that Kid and Cesaro came out on top.
Right.
Which shows that they probably won't win the match.
Right.
We also have four other matches. Well, we already talked about Neville and Bo.
Mm-hmm.
We have a triple threat match for the Divas title. Nikki defending against Paige against Naomi. No one cares. We have Cena against Kevin Owens that they're calling champion versus champion, but, which it is, but no titles are on the line.
So that means that I don't think there's not going to be a clean pin in that match.
I don't think so.
Something's going to go down, which is great. I think that's fine. They're building up. This is a perfect way to build up for the future with Owens losing the title to Finn Balor at some point and coming back and taking the U.S. title.
I don't think
off
Finn will ever win the NXT championship.
You don't think so?
No. I think that, apparently there's been talks that Balor was promised to not spend much time in NXT before going to the main roster. So I don't think that they'll put the title on him just to then move him up to the main roster right away. They've liked having their champions have feuds and have exposure on NXT, not just putting them on them in 2 months and move them over to
course.
The main roster. So I don't think Finn will get it. I also don't know about Joe beating him. I think Sammy might actually take the title from Owens at some point. And
that would be the story. That would be good.
In some sort of blow off, like maybe the first ever NXT cage match or something.
That would be
that.
That would make sense for the storyline. I just think that hopefully what this is setting up with this Owen Cena thing, I'm hoping that it will set up 2-3 months down the road, Owens taking the U.S. title off of Cena. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm really hoping. Because Cena, I'll say it again, has done an incredible job with that title, has made it important again, and he needs to lose that title to someone like Kevin Owens, like Sami Zayn, like Adrian Neville, a worker, an exciting young guy that can help make their career. Mm-hmm. And I hope that they're doing what they never do. They're planting the seeds now, and they're going to harvest later on.
Yeah.
And when they can really tell a good story with it. That's what I'm hoping.
And lastly, we have Seth Rollins defending the World Championship against Dean Ambrose. Any chances in hell that Dean actually wins title?
No way. I, quite honestly, as much as I hope for Dean to look good in this match, Seth Rollins needs to cleanly beat Dean Ambrose in this match. Mm-hmm. A great back and forth, a couple of false finishes, and Seth has to go over to me. He is playing the chicken shit heel a lot of the times. He really needs a good strong win without the help of somebody else. You have to sprinkle those in every now and then to show that you're really a real threat, because when we assume he's going to fight Brock at SummerSlam, we need to make sure that we feel like he can beat Brock.
At least stand a chance
to beat Brock. That needs to happen, and the only way is to have him have a couple of high profile wins. Legitimate wins.
Yeah. I'm unfortunately not going to be able to watch this show live because I'm going to be away on work. So hopefully I'll be able to watch it the next day when I come back. But I hope that it's a good show. They only gave it 2 weeks of build up, because they announced it at Payback.
Yeah.
And
It seems right now that they're throwing everything they can at the wall because they've done the King of the Ring thing and they've done this Elimination Chamber.
And trying to make it on the network, which I'm all for.
I'm all for that as well.
The less Jerry Springer and Jeff Trayman stuff on that I don't have to see on there, the better.
I just don't understand
Trayman
why.
Or whatever.
It just seems like it's so rushed. Like, this must have been a last-minute thing because there's no way you'd want to promote this that way. If you had a long-term plan for it. I think that they should do some of these tournaments. I would like to see them do, a couple months from now, a number one contenders tournament on Tuesday night on the network. I think that'd be very interesting. I'd watch it. So they can definitely do those things. Now, unfortunately, they got 3 hours of Raw and 2 hours of SmackDown, which you usually have nothing going on. So they need to have programming for that. But if they can start utilizing the rest of their divas, if they can start utilizing the rest of their tag teams, have more feuds, have more storylines going at the same time, they definitely have, they have the space, they have the roster to fill that time. They just don't have the storylines to fill that time.
Yeah. All right. Where are we at on time? Ooh, we're over an hour already.
All right. Well, let's do our top five and get the fuck out of here.
All right. So our top five is going to be top five guys we shouldn't have liked, but we did like, whether that be as kids or recently. I don't think for any of us it's recently, but when we were young, impressionable, liked bright colors and tassels, we probably liked guys who just weren't all that great, weren't good workers or weren't really well respected, and just maybe shitty gimmicks. So these are our top five, and I'm going to be really embarrassed at one of them.
Go first. You should go first.
All right. So I'm going to start off with Coco Beware.
the Birdman.
Yeah. I like the fact that he had a parrot. I liked when he was tagging with Owen Hart. And I mean, Coco is part of the Hall of Fame, but I mean, he wasn't all that great in the ring, and he had this really bad gimmick of the Birdman. I mean, who does that nowadays other than Michael Keaton? But yeah, he's number one. Well, the first on the list. Next one, Kevin kind of convinced me to put this one on the list. Not that you like held me down and said you need to.
I held him down
because I actually still do like this guy, and it's Gangrel. I love the entrance. I really liked his look, and I didn't think that he was that bad in the ring, but he wasn't that well liked and by people in the business. And
he was a vampire.
He was a vampire.
In retrospect, yes. Think about that for a second. He was a wrestling vampire. It was 1998, and they had a wrestling vampire.
Yes. Yes, they did.
Okay. I just want to make sure we're clear.
And I liked him. And I never was into the vampire stuff, but whatever. I liked Gangrel. I still do. Next up is Brutus the Barber Beefcake. Oh, I loved. He had cool hair, a mullet, and he carried around shears, and he had pieces missing out of his tights.
Progressively more and more, yeah. Seemingly every year.
Yeah. I don't know why. Maybe he hung around with Hogan, and that was why I liked him, but I was sad when he was like off TV because he got injured in a motorcycle or a boating accident or something and had to have a plate put in his
face. It was hang gliding or something like that, or boating. Yeah, something like that.
And I don't know why. I liked Beefcake. sort of along those lines is the Ultimate Warrior. I think probably every wrestling fan from our generation that's our age, like the Warrior at some point. His face paint, his tassels, his bright colors, his rambling promos that he was just, we didn't know what he was saying. We just liked that he was yelling it, and, he would just have this aura over a small child. And now, I hate to bash the dead, but he was a fucking shitty human being. I mean, he was a fucking, like, a homophobe and a racist and this fucking hardcore right-wing guy that wanted things his way. And I kind of hate that the WWE, like, honored this guy for outside of the ring stuff. And it's like, do you know who you're talking? Like, you did not get along with this guy for a long period of time.
Right.
Just because he said, I'm sorry, doesn't take away all the other shitty things that he did in his life.
There's some definite rose-colored glasses looking back on the past with that one.
And my last one is the worst one out of them all. I liked Mantar. If If you don't know who that is, look it up. M-A-N-T-A-U-R. It was a man that acted like a bull or a cow or...
Not a minotaur, a mantar.
He was ridiculous, but I don't know why. I really liked him. And there was that storyline going on with who's going to be Shawn Michaels' bodyguard that ended up being Diesel. And I really wanted it to be Mantar. Seeing Mantar hang out with Shawn Michaels, to me as a kid, was like, this is going to be the coolest thing ever. Yeah, I apparently was a very dumb kid. But that's my top five wrestlers that I shouldn't have liked.
All right, so I just want to point out one thing. I have my top five, but I want to mention Brutus Beefcake because he was on my list, but that's a cop-out. I want to put other guys on there. Okay. But I just want to mention that Beefcake was on my list. I so wanted the Disciple to get over when he came back with Hogan, because he was in great shape. He was ripped. He had that, you know, the badass biker kind of looking thing. And even at that point, I was like, oh, Brutus Beefcake's finally going to do something. It's going to be great. And no, it wasn't. He became the first and only member of the One Warrior Nation when he was brainwashed by the Warrior and then just went away. So my five guys I should not have liked. Outback Jack.
Holy shit.
Do you remember Outback Jack?
Slightly.
Okay, Outback Jack, on the heels of Crocodile Dundee, we had an Australian wrestler who was not in very good shape, who was briefly, I mean, I think he only had like a 6-month run in the WWF as a babyface, but I thought it was the coolest thing in the world as a Crocodile Dundee fan that Outback Jack, who Jesse the Body Ventura called Outhouse Jack, and my dad laughed hysterically every single time he did it. But I liked Outback Jack.
Okay. How long was it?
Yeah. There's no way. It was like 87 to like 88.
86 to 88.
Okay. Never do. I mean, even like, I've watched all the pay-per-views from that time, and I don't think he was on a single one of them. But I know Outback Jack. So, there's one. That was who I replaced Beefcake with, just to let you know, because I had to have something different. So, next one, Disco Inferno. I thought Disco Inferno was hilarious, especially when he was trying to join the Wolfpack. And he was just made their little lackey, and they basically pushed him around. At one point, Disco Inferno was bringing a plastic, what looked like a goose, but he called his Disco Duck, to the ring as a visual aid. For those of you who don't know, Disco Duck was a novelty song, disco novelty song from whatever, the 70s. And the fact that he was referencing that, which made no sense to 90% of who was watching the show, and the fact that it wasn't a duck, and it was his visual aid, I don't know why, I loved every second of it. When he was just playing kind of that delusional kind of heel role, and when he was with Das Wunderkid, Alex Wright, as like the dancing morons or whatever.
The dancing fools.
I don't know. I was a Disco Inferno fan for a solid year.
I like Disco Inferno too, and I don't think it was a bad thing.
And he also had a good look to him. I mean, his name was Disco Inferno. We have to just stress that. Next, Hugh Morris, the Laughing Man, the No Laughing Matter moonsault. I thought he had a good look. I liked Hugh Morris. He never really did. As Hugh Morris, he did very little. He ended up becoming one of the leader of the Misfits in Action as General Huge Erection, which screams Vince Russo. And there was one point where, before that all happened, there was a storyline with his father escaping a mental institution and wandering down to the ring during one of his matches in a like hospital gown.
I don't remember that.
Yeah, and Hugh Morris was obviously very upset. That was the last it was ever mentioned, I believe. I think that they passed on that idea really quickly. But I liked his gimmick, I liked his look, and I liked Hugh Morris. My next guy, Stardust. For a current guy, I really like the Stardust. Not only that I like the Stardust gimmick, but I love what Cody Rhodes has done with Stardust. I love the fact that he sold it completely. I like the fact that he's playing the persona. They could have done a lot more with him with his brother, which I think they should have run an angle to get him out of the persona with Goldust, which they shit the bed on. But I really have been impressed by what Cody Rhodes has done with that. And my final guy, the Honky Tonk Man. The Honky Tonk Man is the longest reigning Intercontinental Champion of all time, so it might seem strange that I shouldn't have liked him, but he was an Elvis impersonator that was also a wrestler. Let me say that again. An Elvis impersonator who happened to also be a wrestler.
Oh, yeah.
Right? He brought a guitar down to the ring and that he obviously had no idea how to play. He formed a tag team with Greg the Hammer Valentine, who at that point had dyed his hair black and also was holding a guitar that he obviously had no idea how to play. they released a single called A Hunka Hunka Honky Love, which was just absolutely brilliant. He was supposedly not liked at all by anyone in the backstage, was picked to be the IC champion because he happened to walk by an office where Hulk Hogan and Vince McMahon were talking. This is Hogan who said that. Hogan lies about everything. Who knows if it's the truth? But it seems like he was just right place, right time for that. He actually debuted as a babyface. Did you know this?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And they had people call in whether or not they were supporting Honky Tonk Man or not, and that's what turned him heel. And turned him into a heel and launched him on his Intercontinental Championship voyage. But he was
a title that they pretty much just forgot. Like, wait, whatever happened to the IC title? Honky Tonk Man's been carrying it around. Oh, yeah.
Well, maybe we'll just have him get squashed by the Ultimate Warrior in 14 seconds and take the title away, which is exactly what happened. But he worked for a little bit in WCW. He's had crazy rants online where he insults everybody. But my father loved the Honky Tonk Man, and I loved booing the Honky Tonk Man. So that's my top five.
Pretty good ones. All right. So, yeah, we got a lot packed into this episode.
We should probably, though... Excuse me. We should probably do another episode after Elimination Chamber.
Yeah.
You know, just to do a normal episode and do some other stuff in there.
Yeah, absolutely. So
when are you getting back from?
Monday.
So you're getting back and you'll watch the pay-per-view. Maybe we'll do it again on next Tuesday.
Yeah, sounds good to me.
I mean, we've deprived our listening audience
of course
for so long. I mean, we might as well just double up on them.
I know.
Right.
Double down. Discount, double check down. Check.
That didn't make any sense.
No, sorry. We will leave you with that. Make sure that you guys check out our website, missbotspodcast.com. Follow us on Twitter. I unfortunately won't be... If you want to start tweeting, I can give you the login to the account if you want to tweet.
We'll talk about
that.
Okay. I have clever things I might want to say.
Yeah. You can follow us on Twitter at Miss Spots. You can like us on Facebook, facebook.com/MissSpots. But most importantly, you should subscribe to us on iTunes. That is where you can get every episode downloaded to your device of choice whenever we upload a new one, and you can listen to it at your leisure. Guys, enjoy Elimination Chamber and Raw next week. Enjoy NXT. Enjoy TNA while you can, because it's getting canceled in September. If we were more into TNA, we'd probably talk about that a little more, but maybe sometime. Other than that, we'll catch you guys later.